Environment Committee will come to order. We will open as a subcommittee until our members show up here. I'm going to call forward Kristen Mitchell. I'm going to open a public hearing on We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3744. Morning.
Good morning. Chair Colson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kristen Mitchell. I'm with the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, and I was here last week to speak to you about House Bill 3744. We had some amendments that we needed to offer to fix a miscommunication we had with the Legislative Council's office, and I believe that the dash fours fixed that issue. The only change since the last time I was here is on page 8, starting at line 29 through page 9, line 7 of the dash 4 amendments. And these add back some options for WASHEDs to choose if they decide they want to try and achieve a 2% credit for waste prevention programs. They're optional for the local governments and their WASHEDs. They don't have to choose these, but if they do, these are new options for them. So that's most of my testimony this morning. If there are any other questions about this piece of the bill or the rest of the bill, I'd be happy to answer them.
Does the committee have questions, particularly about page 8?
Hang on.
Just briefly, the pieces speak to doing a bi-recycled program, which is an effort to try and close the loop in recycling. And the other piece is kind of what we talked about in a green building program, encouraging local governments to choose options for their buildings, which are more environmentally friendly.
Okay, I got a question now.
Okay, Representative Cruz.
Page 10 of the dash fours, when we're talking about the burning for energy recovery, and we have identified specific waste sheds here. Does this exclude any other waste shed in the future who might get to the point where this becomes a viable option? I mean, I guess I'm wondering why we're identifying those specific ones other than the fact that they are already engaged.
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, this piece is the result of work over the last four sessions when Jim Sears from Marion County talked last week, not four sessions, but 4 years. Jim Sears from Marion County came last week to speak specifically to this section because Marion County has a waste energy facility, and I know that's what you're asking about. The reason that it's written this way is that Marion County has a waste energy facility. They've been limited to the amount of material they can count for their energy recovery number. And what we wanted to do was expand Marion County's ability to take that credit in the same way that other waste sheds have been able to take that credit, but many of the people in the group felt it was important that Marion County only be allowed to take that credit to the extent that waste sheds that had requirements at least as big as Marion County had could take that credit. It's difficult to explain, but Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties, and then Benton, Lane, Lynn, Marion, Polk, or Yamhill each had a requirement of 30% or higher for their recovery number. And so what the group decided was that if those waste sheds with that recovery number could claim these materials burned for energy recovery, then Marion County ought to be able to also. But if another county that had a lower number, and generally those were lower based on location or the number of people, was able to take credit for something that burned for energy recovery, the group didn't think that Marion County should be able to, because there might be better options for Marion County or these other metro-related counties to do other things with the material than just burn it and take it for energy recovery. So that's why there's a limitation. I don't know, does that make sense to you? Then your next question is, does that limit someone else? And I guess in a sense, it might, because if a county such as Malheur with a much lower rate had an energy recovery facility or put one in place, then I think the way this is written, they probably wouldn't be able to take the credit. It would require us to make a revision. I also would like to say that I think that's fairly unlikely, because the cost of putting in a waste energy facility is very large, in the range of hundreds of millions of dollars, or at least close to $2 million. So I don't think it's probably an example of where it will occur.
Okay, follow-up?
Follow-up.
And from Malheur County, you're probably right, but I was thinking more along the lines of Deschutes or Jackson, which are growing communities, and are we limiting their options by doing this? I mean, are we setting up a scenario where they're going to have to come back and we're going to have to rewrite this if indeed they want to go there? I mean, anything we can do to encourage energy generation, we should be doing so.
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, I think it's possible. I mean, I have to go back and read this from that standpoint, but I think it is possible that if a waste shed, such as the Deschutes, which has a lower number, chose to put in a waste-to-energy recovery facility, we would have to go back and review this again.
Okay. I guess, Madam Chair, I just don't want to set up a barrier that somebody's going to have to jump over if indeed, as a community, they decide this is the direction they want to go.
Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 9, a subsection Roman numeral 10, and also it can go from 8, Roman numeral 9. Just remind me again why we went into more detail here. This has to do with the local government having to do an education implement programs to buy recycled content products, and then implement programs for new construction and remodeling that incorporate recycled content materials. What was the League of Oregon City's input on this?
Oh, Chair Close, Representative Moss Anderson, the League was at those meetings. I think Willie Tiffany could speak to
they were at the meeting and they were in agreement.
Yeah, that's great. These are options. These aren't requirements that they have to choose, and they have a number of other options. If you read the entire section, it starts at the top at line 7 on page 8. It says if a waste shed is going to implement this program, they shall include, and then they have to do a general educational campaign. And then at 13, line 13B, two of the following. So these
okay.
just add some additional options for those waste sheds to choose.
Great. Thank you.
Further questions?
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, just on the same subject, so we interpret "will" as being permissive language?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, no, "will" is not permissive. If they choose the option is permissive. If they choose the option, then they will do the complete thing.
Okay.
If you look on page 8, Representative Cruz, under the large B, capital B, it says two of the following. They have to choose two of the following. And then they have all those options.
Yeah.
Further questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to hear this, Phil. I really appreciate it. I think it really moves Oregon forward. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Is anybody else that wants to comment on the amendment? Okay. Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, I would move that the -4 amendment be adopted into House Bill 3744.
Representative Lee has moved the -4 amendment into House Bill 3744. It's a discussion. Is there objection? Seeing that, so ordered. Representative Lee.
Thank you. I would move House Bill 3744 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Representative Lee moves House Bill 3744 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Cruz.
Madam Chair, I will support this, but I do have some real concerns that what we talked about on page 10, that we may be limiting other counties who are high-growth counties in their ability to look at alternative ways of dealing with their waste stream. So it should be a concern, and I want it on the record that if indeed a county like Jackson or Deschutes that is a fast-growing county, I don't want this to be seen as a roadblock. Language could be, you know, in the future legislature could come forward and include them in this. So.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Representative Cruz. I think that is a good idea, and I will, since it is my bill, I will submit that amendment for the Senate side of those for your approval.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Representative
Gentry? Aye.
Representative Torres? He's excused.
Representative
King?
Excused.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative
Lee?
Aye.
Representative
Martin?
Aye.
Representative Morgan? Aye. Representative Holmes? Aye. Motion carries. And I will carry this bill.
We'll ask questions.
Good. You do that. I'm going to open a work session on...
Close the work session.
Closing the work session on 3744. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3144. And call forward Bob Bogoski and Rudy Cadlib and Donald Ottman. Bob will not be coming up. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Don Otterman, City Manager, City of North Plains. Last time we were at the committee, there were some questions raised about HB 3144 and whether or not it would be mandatory on a city if it did not want even if it did want to expand on the other side of a freeway. The wording was questionable whether or not it would permit a city to do so. Dash one amendment, I think, clarifies that issue. It basically states the local government may elect whether to consider land adjacent to an urban growth boundary when the land is separated from the urban growth boundary by a freeway, as defined by ORS 377.10. So this clarifies that the bill would not keep a city from expanding across a freeway if it wanted to expand across a freeway, but it also gives a local government the election as to whether or not it would choose to cross the freeway. Hopefully this wording takes care of the concerns of the committee members. The City of North Plains is in favor of the bill. One thing that I believe it was last hearing, it was looked at as one developer versus another developer bill. This is not a question of one developer versus another developer as far as this bill is concerned. The City of North Plains City Council is in favor of this bill. The City of North Plains Planning Commission has taken action consistent with the recommendations in this bill. And it is our hope that the committee will take action to approve the amendment. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. I do have some information. There were some questions last time about what the city had done so far as the TGM study that was referenced, which recommended going north and east as a direction of growth. I brought the neighbor city study with me, and it's the final report plus the appendix and its recommendation of expansion to the north and to the east, and that was 1997. are in periodic review, as I mentioned before. one of the work tasks, which is determining the direction of growth, was work task number four, which this is work task number four, and its recommendation in work task number four is for our city to expand to the north and east and not to the exception land to the south for all of the findings shown in this appendix, in this volume. This bill, I'm sure, will clarify that the amendment will clarify that the bill is not mandatory on cities to make them not cross a freeway if they wanted to cross a freeway to expand, but it also gives us the option to consider whether we do want to expand across the freeway and make a decision not to do so, consistent with the studies that have been adopted so far.
Questions for Mr. Otterman? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair Close. What about, what do you think of the notion that this can be done already within existing land use laws?
There are exceptions in the Oregon Revised Statutes that if you can meet these exceptions, then a city could possibly choose not to expand onto exception land. There is a big question as to whether or not that would be interpreted by a court as to permit us to not expand to the south, or whether it would be interpreted by a court as being mandatory that the city would have to expand onto exception land, and that there are no exceptions to that fact. That was brought up at the last hearing, and the developer on the south side, the person that has the option on the south side, while he pointed out that there are exceptions in the current law that would give the city the option as to whether to expand to the south or not, I have correspondence with me from the developer stating in his opinion, you have to go south, you have no choice. And so you're kind of hearing both sides of the issue. I would rather not have to leave it open to interpretation of that section of the law at some date in the future, because all of our work we've done so far supports not going to the south, and it would be left basically up to interpretation of one person as to whether or not the law currently states that. This would clarify that a city has an option if it chooses to not go across a freeway. Because the city has, in all of its work so far, has determined the freeway is a barrier to the city. The freeway expansion to the south across the freeway with residential would not be good planning. I have an aerial photo that I could show you if you like, showing where we are now as far as the location of the city being totally on the north side of the freeway. That expansion to the south would put us on the opposite side of a four-lane freeway. It would require our residents to use outdated overpasses to get from one side of the city to the other side of the city. ODOT has actually closed the pedestrian sidewalks on the overpass to keep people from walking on the overpass because it's so outdated, and yet there are no funds budgeted for updating that freeway overpass for the next 10 to 15 years. And it would just put that much more traffic on the overpass. We have in the studies, we have a letter from ODOT recommending that the city not go to the south because of the connection problems with the freeway overpass. So there is a lot of planning issues involved, but if it goes down to interpretation, it would be interpretation based upon where the period is, where the comma is, and not whether it's good planning. And that's my concern. And in this case, we have made a very good sound argument that it's not good planning to go across the freeway.
Representative Cruz, did you have a question?
Well, I suppose I could.
Shall I your hand?
I don't see where the dash one changes a darn thing. I, in fact, I think it may almost confuse things more than help things. But And that's not so much a question, I guess. I'm sorry, I didn't have a question, Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan will take over.
I don't know that I have a question for this witness, but I do have some questions about the exceptions process. In, I noticed that Bob Rindy made a dive for the door a little while ago. But if we could get somebody from the department in here, I would be interested in talking to them about it.
Okay. We also have Mr. DiLorenzo, who's asked to comment. He will be coming shortly.
Further questions for this?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to call John DiLorenzo. And...
Sir, I have Mr. Van Brocklin with me, too.
Okay.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm here today on behalf of my client, the Spec Company. With me also is Mr. Robert Van Brocklin, the Spec Company's land use attorney. We've analyzed the Dash 1 amendments. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on them. In our view, the Dash 1 amendments do little more than restate the provisions of the original bill. The only difference is that the Dash 1 amendments now provide that a local government at its whim can overlook the priority scheme when it involves a parcel of land that is separated from the urban growth boundary by a freeway. That's really all the amendment does. We're opposed to the amendment, and we're also opposed to the bill, either version, with or without an amendment, for three reasons. First of all, there are ways for North Plains to expand to the north. Secondly, North Plains has not attempted to avail itself of the process that is currently employed in the law in order to make a showing to expand to the north. And third, it does not appear that any of the proponents of the bill have engaged in any analysis over what the statewide impacts of a law of general application like this would be. With respect to the first point, that there are ways to expand to the north, the current statute would allow expansion to the north of the urban growth boundary, even into the farming area, if the City of North Plains could make a showing of the following things: either that specific lands cannot be accommodated on higher priority lands, or that future urban services cannot be provided to higher priority lands due to topographical or physical constraints, which could include a freeway, or that maximum efficiency of land uses require inclusion of the lower priority lands in order to include or serve the higher priority lands. The current statute would allow North Plains to expand in the north if they could make a showing of one of these particular provisions. What North Plains would like to do, and what the developer to the north would like to do, is allow North Plains to do this in absence of making any showing. In other words, allow them to do it without going through the process. North Plains has not even attempted to avail itself of the current process yet. It's the Spec Company's position that North Plains should at least attempt to try to make these showings. Now, we think that ultimately they are going to be unable to make the showings. But if they're unable to make the showings, then it's probably because the freeway does not provide the type of topographical or physical constraint that should restrict expansion. So if it does, if what they're saying here is correct, they should be able to make a showing to that effect. All we're asking is that they follow current law and at least first attempt to make the showing before they ask for a wholesale change of the system, which gets to our last point. And that is, although the real fight here is over North Plains and two developers, there has been no analysis, no suggestion so far as to what the statewide impacts of this policy would be if every local government were allowed to merely disregard the criteria and the priority format whenever there was a freeway that separated an urban growth boundary from other land. And so for those reasons, we continue to be opposed to the main bill. We are opposed to the amendment because it does little more than restate the main bill.
Questions? Do you want to comment?
I think John summarized our view.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Did we find the department?
Not quite the department. Okay, until we're able to check with the department, I think that we will hold on this bill. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3144. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2976. I'm sorry, the amendments are not ready. We're closing that work session. Mm-hmm. Opening the work session on House Bill 3026A. We have Gary Conklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gary Conklin, representing both the Beaverton and Hillsborough school districts. In support of House Bill 3026 and the A2 amendment. First off, I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for your patience. You recall this bill moved out of committee to the floor, and when the Oregon Farm Bureau approached members of the committee and others, including me, with a suggestion, it seemed like a good idea to incorporate it. I think it strengthens the bill, and the A2 amendment effectively does that. The language that the Farm Bureau requested on the amendment starts on line 5 and goes through line 12. It provides for an alternatives analysis that's required of a school district before it can exercise the authority to acquire and build on a site outside of UGB. And the active language is in 3A that says that you must prepare and submit the analysis of alternative sites, which includes sites both inside and outside the UGB, as well as to prepare and document that you have looked at alternative sites that are not on high-value soils and that are adjacent to the existing UGB. There are two other provisions in the bill, both of which came from suggestions made by the Department of Use, Land Conservation and Development. The first is on line 3. I was reminded that ORS 195.110 had a permissive section that allowed a school district of any size on its own initiative to move forward with the joint school facility planning provisions that are part of this section. And so I have added language here that makes clear that these particular provisions relating to UGB sites are limited to the high-growth school districts that are cited by criteria. That's what actually I had intended, and through a failure, since colleagues and myself worked on 195.110 several years ago, I forgot about that permissive provision. So this is just to make clear that it is dealing with the criteria referenced districts. And then finally, on line 17 through 19, there's a provision that modifies the priorities for UGB additions under 197.298. Again, this was a suggestion by the department to treat these school sites as a highest priority so that they can be moved quickly inside the urban growth boundary, which would, at least in the case of my two school districts, be their intention in any case. They would prefer to have sites that either are or are moving into the UGB, and if not, that they can get into the UGB as quickly as possible. So I think all of these amendments strengthen the bill. They retain its intent, which, as you recall, is to address the problem that, at least in the districts that I represent, we've just run out of sites, and we're not searching for them out of convenience. As I mentioned before, the Beaverton School District is pursuing its third condemnation of property. That's not what I call either convenience or good planning. But in any case, that's the motivation for the bill, and I would recommend support of the A2 amendments and repassage of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Monica Emerson.
Thank you. Gary, on when it concerns a private school, even though the private school isn't a high-growth school district, would they also be then able to go through this process and build on outside of the urban growth boundary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the way this language is constructed, they would be able to do so. As you'll recall in my presentation, I noted that, again, citing the statistics in the Beaverton School District, we have students that are in our boundary area that are attending a variety of private schools at somewhere in the neighborhood of between 5,000 and 6,000 students. So we're meeting part of our enrollment demand through private schools, and they have the same problem we do, which is they can't find sites. I don't know that they're actively looking. These provisions were written to provide for their inclusion as well.
And follow-up?
Follow-up.
And what has the farm, have you worked, what is, well, will we have the Farm Bureau?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
As they show up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Schellenberg, I did see him pop his head through the door, and I should have noted if I didn't say it more clearly. This language was what Mr. Schellenberg recommended, and we worked out where to put it, basically, as opposed to what it said, and I believe he's satisfied. He should speak for himself and the Farm Bureau, but in any case, when it was submitted to Legislative Council, it was submitted with his approval.
Representative Cruz.
Madam Chair, I'm going to move the dash 8 to amendment. You're in work session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are. My only concern is that Farm Bureau is not yet here, and they were signed up to testify.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
what does it have?
Could we hear from 1,000 Friends, too, on this amendment?
I'm not sure.
They have not contacted us earlier to testify.
Is that a requirement?
Could you get those?
Mm-hmm.
We're putting the holiday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
My apologies, Madam Chair. What am I doing here?
You weren't here. You're not getting away either.
Yeah, okay.
Tell us how much you like the A2s.
We're on 3026. An amendment that says A2 on it, and we would like you to comment. Do you want me to give you that amendment?
I have them, Madam Chair. Thank you. if the A2s are what I think they are, and I believe they are, what they provide for is for the district to do an alternative analysis of the area to see if there is other than high-value farmland and land adjacent to a UGB inside this high-growth area. If there is, then that's what the city or the school district, what the school district should use that land. And it would then be first priority to come inside the UGB, which is where it ought to be anyway, in that case. If they do that alternative analysis and there isn't that kind of land available, then if I understand this correctly, then they could look anywhere inside that school district in the EFU zone for land for the school. Our preference, certainly, and our concern, you know, if you're going to use farmland, use the least valuable farmland, and put it right next to the UGB. That's where it needs to be. So to the extent that this does that, and I believe that's what it does do, we would support the amendments.
Questions? Representative Monica Anderson.
Thank you, Madam. So if there is land, EFU land, outside, and there is no, I'm thinking all over the state, I mean, if there is no non-high-value land, then they could build on the high-value farmland.
Madam Chair, Representative Montes Anderson, I believe this bill limits it only to those high-growth school districts, so it wouldn't apply to most of the state. It would only apply to certain school districts. Now, I'm not sure how many of those there are or where they all are, but it is limited to that extent.
And high-growth is defined in statute, high-growth school district.
Mm-hmm. 195.110.
Madam Chair, Representative Montes Anderson, yes, it is.
That is in the amendment on line four, I believe.
Further questions?
Okay. Any more questions for Dawn? Okay. Hearing none, we do have a motion on the floor.
Thank you.
You want to restate your motion?
Madam Chair, I move the dash 82 amendment to House Bill 3027.
Okay, Representative Cruz moves the A2 amendment into House Bill 3026. Is there discussion? Representative Kapoori.
Did we hear from the department on these amendments? Did they have any comment on?
We only heard from Jerry Comping and Don Schoenberg this morning that they wanted to testify.
Okay.
Who we have?
Madam Chair.
Representative Half.
Is there a requirement? Is there a reason why we couldn't hear from others who want to testify on this amendment?
Well, if I open it up to one, then we open it up to a public hearing, basically, and it's not a public hearing. So.
But I'm not sure that there's the practical purposes that that's going to happen. I think if there's one or two people that really want to participate, we should let them.
Is that the pleasure of the committee? We have a motion on the floor. If Representative Cruz wants to remove his motion.
Madam Chair, there's a couple people that seem to be very agitated about talking on this bill, so I will suspend my motion for the time being. I'm perfectly happy to let Thousand Friends come up and speak on the department.
Representative Cruz withdraws his amendment, so we will take a few minutes to entertain further testimony. So, who's here for Thousand Friends?
I'm in my ready.
I know. I'm just one heck of a nice guy. It's just all there is to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Randy Tucker of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I just wanted to, for the record, say that we did request a chance to testify, and so I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning.
You requested from who?
I sent a note up to you earlier, just after the hearing convened this morning, requesting an opportunity to testify on this and on House Bill 3144, since we have not had a chance to testify to the amendment.
Okay, I don't know what time that was. I received no note.
Okay.
What time did you send it?
Within about 3 minutes of the beginning of the hearing this morning.
Up here to the desk?
Yes.
Hear the note? Okay, continue. We will look for the note. We don't.
Thank you.
I don't see it.
Sorry for the confusion.
Good morning, committee, and thank you, Representative Cruz, for withdrawing your motion to give us the opportunity to testify. My comments on this bill echo the comments that Mr. DiLorenzo gave on the previous bill. That is, that there's been no attempt made to cite a school under existing law by the proponents of this bill. This bill has been before the legislature for the past two or three sessions, and we have many times offered to the proponents that we work on how to make it easier to cite schools inside urban growth boundaries, but there's been no attempt to try to do that. We believe that if there is a shortage or lack of school sites in the Beaverton-Hillsborough area, that they can make a good case to expand the urban growth boundary, just as Metro has expanded the urban growth boundary for a school site in West Lynn. But there's been no attempt by this district to expand the urban growth boundary. Again, we think existing law provides that the appropriate measure to take if there is a lack of school sites is to...
Would you give your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Mary Kyle McCurdy, staff attorney with 1,000 Friends.
Thank you.
So we urge you, rather than bending the law in order to allow a school to site itself outside of an urban growth boundary on farmland, that you ask the school district to make an attempt to expand the urban growth boundary. If there's a lack of school sites, they can make the case. Thank you.
Representative Half.
Thank you. One of the problems in the Portland area has been, of course, Metro administers the UGB, and Metro has tended to expand on the east side more or less in the last decade. That doesn't help Beaverton or Hillsborough if it's if they have to build a school 25 miles away, I mean, that is of no help at all.
Chair Close, Representative Haas, there's not been a request for Metro to expand the urban growth boundary for a school site on the west side. So it's difficult for Metro to do that if there hasn't been a request for it. I think that schools have an ideal opportunity to argue for a UGB expansion that is very locationally related, unlike, for example, a need for land for housing in the future that could be met in a variety of places. Schools can only be sited where the need for that school is. So it doesn't make sense to expand an urban growth boundary for a school site that's needed in Beaverton and make that expansion in Gladstone.
Right.
So I think that they have an excellent opportunity to make a case that they need land for a school site in the Beaverton-Hillsborough area. It just hasn't been made yet.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to Representative Witt, who's in the room.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. You didn't want to speak? Okay. All right. The department, yeah, are they here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Bob Rindy, and I'm with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We continue to have a great concern for this bill. I want to point out what the amendments state on their face, and that is simply that in order to site a school outside of an urban growth boundary, now the school is going to have to submit something to the local government showing that they considered other sites. That is all they have to do is to show consideration that they looked for other sites that are not high value, and there's nothing here that shows that asks them to show whether they looked for sites inside the urban growth boundary. What our purposes, as we've stated before, in trying to adopt amendments to the urban growth boundary rules the last 2 years, one of our purposes is to try and make sure that local governments do a better job of planning for school sites inside urban growth boundaries. That's what the law has required up to now, and I think that's going to be the solution to this. I don't think that this bill will cause a better process. I note what's missing is school districts don't have to make any findings as part of this bill to show whether or not it makes any sense from a transportation standpoint and from a public facility standpoint to serve their particular site. I think the intent of the language in the amendment on line 11 is to ask school districts to look at sites at least that are adjacent to urban growth boundaries, but the wording of that almost makes it look like it says the opposite. It seems to ask whether they have to show that they looked at sites that are adjacent to urban growth boundaries. I think that's their intent there, but I don't think that's exactly what that says. Finally, I think that we again think the result of this is school districts will stop looking for school sites, or at least no longer feel compelled to look for sites inside urban growth boundaries. It's much less expensive to site a school on farmland. And I know that school districts, if they knew they had the opportunity, as this bill allows, to simply supersite it just by buying a site to site outside of UGB.
Mr. Rindy, You raised the point about public facilities issues. If the school district can show to the governing body that they have analyzed the use of other sites and for whatever reason they're choosing to submit a site that is outside of the urban growth boundary on the lowest value soils, then would that not be the place in the process where the public facilities aspects would need to be addressed?
Chair Close, Representative Morgan, I think there's an opportunity there. I believe this language leaves an opportunity for school districts to examine anything they want to. But I want you to understand this is not a requirement. If a school district looked at an alternative site and it was clearly a better site in terms of public facilities or farmland, and they decided for whatever reason to not select it, nothing in this language compels them to select that site. This language simply says that they have to show they considered it. There's nothing compelling here, and I just want that to be clear. It's merely documenting that they at least examined other sites.
Okay. Really, Morgan.
There is a process whereby the district could ask for the urban growth boundary of whatever jurisdiction they're in to be enlarged to include land. Can you talk to the committee about how long it generally takes to work your way through an urban growth boundary amendment process?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I don't have statistics on, I suppose we could do some research, but I don't think anybody has studied the average time. It depends on the jurisdiction. I think
we're talking about years here. We're not talking about days or weeks or months.
Metro has two processes. They have a process, a legislative process for a broad examination of land needs and expansion of the Metro Urban Growth Boundary. But they also have a process for small parcels to come into the boundary one at a time that are very small. And I think that process moves fairly quickly, and that process is dependent on someone applying to Metro for that UGB amendment. And again, what hasn't happened here is the district hasn't done that.
Can you, just off the top of your head, recall any cases that you know of where the urban growth boundary has been enlarged on a parcel-by-parcel basis?
Representative Morgan, there are probably scores of those in the history of Metro in the last 10 years, and I would have to bring, I'm sure Metro could bring you that documentation. They have made minor amendments to the urban growth boundary constantly since that process was instituted, and I believe it was put into place around the early 80s by Metro. Again, that's a process for small-scale amendments to the urban growth boundary, small parcels that come in under an expedited process. And I don't know the total numbers, I'm sorry, but I doubt if there's been 100 since then, but there has certainly been a large number.
In the last 20 years, you're saying?
Correct.
Have you got any idea how long it takes people to work their way through that process?
Again, Representative Morgan, I don't know the timelines for the expedited process. I just understand that it is expedited, and I don't believe that it takes years and years as has been charged through the other process. I think the other process also can, the bigger legislative process of amendment of the Metro UGB, even that process could take place within a year. The problem has been is that there has been litigation on those. And that process in the last few years has, I think there's many sites that have come in without litigation, and that's moved in pretty quickly. But when people say that it takes years, they're referring to those sites where there is an appeal filed. And yes, those do take longer.
Well, and it should be noted that every decision or every application is open to be routed through that appeals process by whoever wants to route it through.
That is correct, Representative Morgan. But I guess what I'm saying is there are a large number of properties that do not get appealed that have come into urban growth boundaries around the state and in Metro, either under their expedited process and under their broader process. It's not every property that's appealed by any means. So I think Metro could probably give you some statistics on how many they've approved under the expedited process and how many under the broader process, and the average time that takes. I don't think we would have records on the time that those amendments take from when they're first filed to when they're finally approved. But I'm certain that if you ask that of Metro, they probably do have some records on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, we never did have Metro, did we, speak on this?
Not that I remember. Last the staff of the Senate seat. No.
Their input, I think, would have been extremely valuable.
No, that is their call, Representative Monahan. Representative Cruz.
Madam Chair, I move the -A2 amendment to House Bill 3026.
Representative Cruz has moved the -A2 amendment into House Bill 3026. Is there discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move House Bill 3026 as amended to the floor with a B-pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz has moved House Bill 3026 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to support this bill.
and I'm going to support it, you know, principally. I've heard a lot of discussion this morning about other sort of options that might or might not be available out there, and I think I should underline might not. Also, the issue has been raised as far as time elements are concerned, and I guess my simple kind of country boy look at this sort of thing is, how long are we going to ask the children in this district to be that much inconvenienced when, in fact, the district is ready, willing, and able to step up and build the facilities that they need?
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Monica Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had a real problem in deciding what to do with this bill, because I have actually worked with the people, school board members of one of them that's in the back of this room, very closely, and I am extremely aware of the problem that Washington County and Hillsborough School District has. But I still feel that planning has to be done on an area-wide basis, or it's not going to work. And I am very sorry that there hasn't been a process with Metro in dealing with this issue with our schools. But I still think, even if Metro has been remiss, maybe we do have a system in place where we would be able to expand the urban growth boundary, and I think through Metro. And so I will be voting no, just because there is a process in place, and I feel very strongly that it's good state policy to have our planning when we're dealing with growth.
Further discussion, Representative King?
I did notice that we're having work session on 3026A, and the motion was 3026, just in case that makes a difference.
Amended the motion. Thank you, Representative King.
Thank you. I'm going to be voting for the bill, because I think that Washington County has outgrown its ability to have, been able to buy land ahead of the growth rate and keep up with the growth rate. And I think that the spacing and the costs have probably basically taken the school district out of the ability to meet its current needs, let alone its future needs. I will state, though, that but I wish I'd realized earlier the implication for private schools, because I'm not against private schools at all. I certainly support them, but I think that their requirements are different, and that they can site virtually anywhere and don't have the same in-district requirements that public school districts have, and so I have a concern about that aspect of the bill, but I am supporting the bill forward.
I also am supporting the bill, and there are a couple of things that kind of tip the balance for me, and one of them is that this issue has been around in the last session in this very committee. We attempted to solve this problem, and I really question how much energy has been put in the interim by the department and the other side of the equation on this one in actually trying to find a solution. And it's really frustrating because we're stuck in a place here where we have only a finite amount of money to put into the education basket. And we would be far better off to use those dollars to educate students than to push a very onerous land use planning process on a district, or cause them to spend a lot of their education dollars on buying a piece of property that they need to build a school on. And so I think that there is certainly an issue that's within the land use planning venue in relationship to this bill, but there's also a greater issue about how we choose to spend our education dollars in this state. And I would personally rather set up a process where we can spend the dollars educating children.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also support the bill, because with 20% growth in my area, I expect that we will have the same problem in the near future. I do share Representative King's issue about private schools, but I'm willing to support the bill as written.
further discussion, Representative Half?
Thank you. I've probably agonized more about this bill than any bill that we've had. Since we've dealt with this the first time around, a couple of things have happened in my area that give me pause. There's been some huge buildings opening up just in my neighborhood, for one thing, and I don't mean to be anecdotal about this, but there's now a huge vacant place where there used to be a home base. There's a huge place that's opening. It used to be a Montgomery Ward, and our city council in Beaverton is now in the process of dealing with siting a huge big box development for Home Depot. And so that gives me pause that there are sites if a district is creative, but they're still expensive. And that's why this has always been, to me, sort of an education funding bill dressed up like a land use bill. The problem that I've had since then, as I think about this, is you can make a very compelling case for schools to do this, but I suppose you can make that same case for jails, hospitals, and the frustration I have is this is not a great answer, but at least it is an answer. And I have a hard time voting for bad solutions to a problem. And I just can't get past the idea that this is not a good solution to a problem, which is really an education funding problem. So I'm gonna vote no.
Okay, no further discussion. I guess I would just comment that at $300,000 an acre or more, I don't know that any education budget could fund at those prices. Mm-hmm. But
Madam Chair, can I have ask a question on the fiscal that we got with this? I don't understand why it's going to cost $40,000 to $50,000 of general fund money to have this bill implemented. Where is that? It says that the bill requires administrative rule and goal changes to comply with the statutes. Could someone explain to me what that this actually means?
Jerry, would you like to comment? I guess specifically we'd like to know what exactly would be involved administratively.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again for the record, Gary Conkling, representing the Beaverton and Hillsborough School District. I don't know what rule changes would necessarily be required. At one point, we had discussed the possibility of some type of an expedited review process for urban growth boundary amendments for sites through this process, but in consultation with the department, somewhat because of the fact that a rule would be required for that, we dropped that particular idea. So I don't know what requirements would be necessary here to implement this. ORS 195110 is already in statute. the only other statute that we change is 197-298, and that's just to change a different priority. So I guess I'm unfamiliar with what would be necessarily required, but perhaps the department.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Senator Cabori?
No.
Senator King? Aye. Senator
Cruz? Is excused. Representative Lee?
Aye.
Senator Boynton?
No.
Senator
Morgan? Aye.
Senator Close?
Well,
fine.
I'm here now.
I can vote yes.
Representative Cruz? Vote yes. Motion carries. And Representative Witt will carry this bill. And close the work session on House Bill 3026A. Going to open a work session on House Bill 3144 and let Representative Witt testify on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A couple of weeks ago, during the public hearing on this bill, I listened to the concerns of committee members relative to the language of this bill, What came out clearly to me was that there was a concern that this bill could end up bringing other cities within its purview who didn't necessarily want to have the options that this bill would grant to those other cities. Because of that, I had the Dash 1 amendments drafted, and as you can see, the Dash 1 amendments specifically required the city to elect to want to keep its development on one side of a freeway. There's nothing here that would require a city to stay simply on one side of a freeway. I think also this bill has been a little bit confusing because some people have tried to create the impression that this is a dispute between two developers. Well, it's really not that simple. This is a case of a city, a small city, that currently is only on one side of a divided freeway that has continuously elected to maintain its development and maintain the city simply on that one side of the freeway. It simply doesn't want to be forced to go across the freeway in terms of its future growth and development. So really, this is not a case of two developers who are trying to get their land in a priority queue. This is a case of a city trying to make an election. I think most of you had an opportunity to see the maps and the development of North Plains as it currently exists. It is presently totally on the north side of the Sunset Freeway. All of its retail services, its government services, the school district, the post office, everything is on the north side of the freeway. The city rationally, through the course of several years, has come to the conclusion that we want to keep our development north of the freeway, not put population south of the freeway, that then has to use two overpasses over the Sunset Highway that are already very heavily used to get to the school, the post office, the grocery store, all the other retail services which are simply on one side of the city. So I think if the committee looks at it that way, this Dash 1 amendment carefully draws this as a city must elect to make this decision, and if the city so elects, then the city would have the option of developing that land first as opposed to being forced to develop land south of the freeway or on the other side of the freeway before it develops the land on the side of the freeway where the city already exists. And finally, I would point out that the opponents to this bill have said that if the city tries to develop to the north of the freeway under current law, it would clearly sue the city. It's not just a case of two developers that might be in court. The city is the one that wants to develop to the north of the freeway. The folks who own the land to the south of the freeway want to have their land developed first. So I think this is a question, does this bill present a reasonable and a rational opportunity for a city to make an election based upon what they believe is best for its future development? And I think in this case, I think North Plains has clearly shown that there's strong rational reasons as to why they should be allowed to develop north of the city, and this bill simply allows them the opportunity to make that election if they think that is in their best interest. So if there's any questions, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Representative Witt. Representative Monica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I thought I had heard that they won't really sue the city. They're going to sue the developer if a suit comes out, and if the city makes the decision to go north, where it's obvious in the North Plains area that that's where that's where the growth should be. But I'm not a part of the process. I still am not quite sure why the current law won't. Why this would make it easier, because I think even with this law, suits are still going to happen.
Madam Chair, Representative Montes Anderson, I don't think the developer to the north under the current law has any legal standing really to force the lawsuit. The city has to try to pursue remedies that will allow it to develop to the north, and the developer to the south has made it clear that they will engage in legal action against the city to prevent it from following that course of action. If this bill passes and becomes law, and the city makes the election as it's laid out for in this bill, then the developer to the south, it seems to me, has no real legal basis to bring a suit against the city. But absent this bill becoming law, I think clearly the developer to the south, and I think they've stated in their testimony that they would sue the city if the city continued to pursue development to the north. The developer to the north, under the current law, I mean, there's nothing that the developer to the south could do to bring a suit against the developer to the north. It's not the developer to the north's decision as to where the city would expand. Right now, the law, I think, clearly seems to create a strong likelihood that the city be forced to develop to the south. The city doesn't want to. It wants to develop to the north. So there's a lawsuit here, I think, would obviously be against the city.
Further questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3144. And I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3557. Mr. Chandler.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler on behalf of the Urban Development Coalition on House Bill 3557, the -3 amendments thereto. The committee probably got the -2s. We did not hold a work session on them. They were simply issued by legislative council to correct an oversight in drafting the -3s, added some language that was discussed at the hearing on this bill. With the chair's permission, I'll walk through the committee through the changes very quickly. The first is change is not a change on lines 7 through 10 of the bill where it specifies the membership of the study committee. A number of the witnesses expressed concern that local government should be involved and citizen groups should be involved. Both EDD and PLCD testified that they would certainly include those folks in the work group. The way the bill is worded, it simply says of at least 7 members. From our standpoint, the critical phrase there is that the people on this committee understand industrial and commercial development, and it was not our intention to be exclusive of any particular group, simply to make sure that whoever participated had that working background. The other groups that wanted to be part of the bill specifically have agreed that with those statements by the departments, they're fine with the language as written. On line 14, the words mixed use have been added. Mixed use is in some parts of the state becoming more of a part of the particularly commercial landscape. It's a development where there's a mixture of uses, as the term implies, usually residential and retail, but it can take other forms. It's the intention is to have this working group, when they do the inventories, look at these separate items separately. Not all development is going to occur in a mixed-use fashion, just like all development is not going to occur in industrial fashion, but to make sure that we do get a good picture of what's happening in the community by looking at industrial, commercial, and those areas where the uses are mixed. Next change appears on the next page, lines 5 through 7. We added to the list of things that this work group is charged with taking a look at or considering letter H and letter I. The changing nature of industrial and commercial uses, the implications of that for land use planning. What we're trying to get at there, and all of these, the A through I, are going to be things that the committee is supposed to look at, but it's not obviously bound to do anything in particular with them, their consideration. That as we've seen in the state over the last number of years, as we move from a timber economy to a high-tech economy, obviously that creates changes in what's necessary in industrial land, and that's what H is intended to look at. And I addresses the issue of where industrial lands are being converted to other non-industrial uses, to be able to track that and make sure that the community is doing what it needs to do in order to protect its future economic viability. The next change and final change, I believe, no, excuse me, there's two more. On line 27 and 28 on page 2, this is the list of folks who get a copy of the report. It was suggested during the hearing that it be to the Legislative Assembly or the appropriate interim committee. I believe Representative Cruz had the idea. I think it's a good one. We've included that in. And finally, on the page 3, lines 16 through 17, the previous wording had stated no geographic impediments. The suggestion was made that was a little bit on the harsh side. We've inserted the word significant, so that land that has some geographic problem, for example, a wetland that can be worked around on site, would not be excluded from the inventory just by virtue of the fact that it had a wetland. The intent of the bill, I'm very pleased with the amendments. I'm very appreciative of those who worked on them with us and the support they gave. We'll see how it plays out. We're very hopeful, though, that this will result, by next session rolls around, in a good working inventory of several cities in the state, what their commercial industrial land base is, how it compares with their comprehensive plan,
and give us some guideposts, both for those communities and for the state land use system as a whole, as to how to fix whatever problems are identified and how to build on whatever successes are identified in the inventory process. Those are the, we commend them to you, ask for your support, and be glad to take any questions.
Questions, Representative Mona Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. Why doesn't the commercial development industry, why aren't they able to find and inventory the commercial properties without the taxpayers' help, without the taxpayers' money? Why can't the commercial industry do this on their own?
Madam Chair, Representative Miles Anderson, I can think of, off the top of my head here, a couple of reasons. One is the nature of the industry. That's not in most commercial developers or residential developers or industrial developers don't necessarily have that skill set available to them. Actually, 3 points. Second point is that the state does assist on the residential side with doing inventories of buildable lands. That's already in the statute. Commercial industrial have, by state administrative rule, Rule 9, they supposedly have had these inventories done as part of jurisdiction's comprehensive planning process. This simply is intended to bolster that, make it clear what they're looking for, and how compare the land supply with the comprehensive planning being done. And the final reason I can think of, and probably the most important, is that were we to do so, I don't think local government or state government would necessarily take our word for it. I would be more than happy to entertain amendments that said that whatever we come up with, that's what they have to work with, but I don't think that would fly out of here very well.
That may be, but you would have to probably do some negotiation with the government, whatever decisions made. But I'm also wanting to know, don't you feel or don't you think the purpose or the intent of this bill is so that the inventory will be used to expand growth and development?
Madam Chair, Representative Miles Anderson, no, not necessarily. We are intending, though, to make sure, let me back up a second. A bit of history here. On the residential side, there has been a long-standing involvement from the industry in the land use planning process. In 95, the legislature passed a bill that built upon previous LCDC practice, required 20-year land supplies to require periodic inventories, very detailed process on how that got done. There really wasn't an equivalent set of requirements on the commercial industrial side. There is administrative rules, as I said, under Rule 9, which deals with economic development, and there's been kind of nodding attention given to the issue as it went along, but it really hasn't got much attention in the period, in the comprehensive planning process. The reason we believe the bill is necessary is to correct that, frankly, and to put industrial and commercial land into the discussion to make sure that jurisdictions, as they're planning over the next 20 years, not look simply at residential uses, but look at what they're going to need in terms of commercial industrial land, to see what's happening with the land they have, make sure that their industrial land is sited in the right place, has that their public facilities plans have enough, are directing the infrastructure to industry and commerce so that they can keep the job base. There's no foregone conclusion to this. It may be, we'll find out in some jurisdictions, that additional effort is going to need to be, should be made to bolster economic development. We may find in others that they're doing a very good job and nothing more needs to be done. We've tried very hard to be non-sectarian, as it were. We're trying not to predispose an outcome.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I commend the work group's efforts. Goal 9 hasn't been looked at for almost 15 years, and it is the state's planning effort that is required to do this, I believe. And certainly in Clackamas, we need to be looking at this, so I thank your group for putting this together.
Thank you.
Representative King.
Apparently we don't have a fiscal yet.
Yeah. You're right. Madam Chair, Members, we do not have a fiscal. They're working on it. We didn't get the dash threes till this morning, and so they're unable to prepare a fiscal in this amendment.
Any notion of a fiscal from the witness?
Madam Chair, Representative King, we've met with legislative, whichever it is, fiscal, and discussed a number of $250,000 for the study. the fiscal had ought to reflect that number. If it reflects another number, then we have to have another chat with less than a fiscal. We've also discussed this with the co-chairs, and we'll have no guarantees, obviously. Procedurally, I suspect, Madam Chair, it might be it needs to take a trip down the hall to Ways and Means. In any event, it probably ought to, if it suits the committee's intention, to move it there. Once the forecasts come out and they get working, then we can move it directly from Ways and Means on. From the conversations we've had, when we have pledged to both agencies, we're not going to try to take existing funds, but so far it looks as though that the process will probably allocate that amount of money to this process, to this bill.
And follow up.
Follow up.
I'm guessing, you know, general funds is pretty pink with it. Is there any other source of revenue to cover that? And can you give some notion of you know, how much we might be saving, you know, if we're spending that kind of money?
Madam Chair, Mr. King, we haven't had that level of detailed conversation yet, but we certainly will. One of the things we'll be looking at in our conversations with the agencies, although they've made no commitments one way or the other, is to what extent they already had something parallel to this in mind in their work plans for their upcoming biennium, and could that track into this. As far as other sources of funds, we really haven't got into that. I you make a good point, and we'll call to the Ways and Means folks' attention that there will be some savings here in making sure the planning is done properly. I suspect that's a good point.
Further questions? Representative Cruz.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 3557.
Representative Cruz moves the Dash 3 amendment into House Bill 3557. Is there discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move House Bill 3557 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 3557 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with its due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Representative King.
Yes, I'd prefer moving it to Ways and Means, but not putting a due pass on it from the standpoint of, you know, we're unclear on, you know, on the fiscal issues of that, and they have some substance. So, you know, I'd provide the courtesy of voting the bill forward, but I think it's more appropriate to pass and let the committee make some judgments on the fiscal justification.
Representative Morgan.
Okay, I would just remind Representative King that we in fiscal are looking for your recommendation on the policy of the bill, and that we'll be looking at ways to whittle the fiscal there.
My trust was one of the reasons why I'd be willing to carry it forward. But I was just concerned that maybe as much of the homework, you know, to deal with that issue, you know, hasn't been done as of yet.
Further comments? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hatch?
Yes.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Cruz? Aye.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative
Morgan?
Aye.
Chair
Close? Both aye. Motion carries, and 3557 goes to Ways and Means. Is there anything else for the good of the committee this morning? Thank you all. I appreciate your work. We are. Had one last motion he would like to make.
I'd like to be able to vote on 3744.
I don't think so.
Representative King asked that we suspend the rules and allow him to vote on House Bill 3.
What do you think?
I'm going on
3744.
You want to
know? Can I hijack that motion?
We have an amended motion that we suspend the rules and request that Representative King and Kafori be allowed to vote on House Bill 3744. Is there objection?
They weren't here. I'm sure we're rewarding people for tardy behavior.
Representative Grant has an
objection. No, he does not have an objection.
It's not. We don't know. There is no objection. How do you vote, Representative King?
Aye.
And Representative Corey?
Aye.
Motion still carries.
Thank you.
I think Representative Cruz had a good point, and I think Representative Corey and I owe the donuts next time.
Okay. Deal.
Hey, there's the benefit.